ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
It was a Joe Root legacy day to open the second test at the Gabba. Joe Root, 135 not out at stumps as he got his 100 on Australian shores. The last big qualifier on his greatness. He breaks through all of that. And we got a whole lot to chop up here on the ABC Cricket Podcast with your boys in the house at the Brisbane Cricket Ground, the beautiful Gabba, Corbin Middlemass, alongside former Australian opener, my podcast co-host, Ed Cowan. Hello, Teddy.
Corby, what a day. That was fun. That's Test cricket.
Oh, yeah.
That was fantastic. I watched every ball, actually. Was glued.
Superb 100. Unbelievable bowling from a left armer in Mitchell Starc. We had outstanding feats in the field, a sensational catch, a run out. We've got a whole lot to chop up on. Selection drama.
I can't believe you didn't start with the selection bombshell at the start of the day.
Which just peddles the thirsty cricket engines that are hungry for content, and often selection's one of the major ones, but we've got a whole lot to pick apart. But just to catch you up in case you've been living under a rock, 9 for 325 at stumps, England on day one. Who took day one honours?
Advantage England, for sure. I think it was the first session belonged to England. The second session belonged to England. Australia then took the hour after tea time for the evening session and totally recaptured the game in their favour, to the point that you actually thought England were probably going to declare and have a nibble at Australia. And then 60 runs in the last half an hour blew the Australians out of the water. That was England's day.
So the runs at the end justifies it, that they were better off with the runs than they were bowling tonight?
Probably the equivalent, I reckon, of two wickets.
Okay.
They're overs now, I think.
Yeah. So 325 and counting.
Yeah.
And they were 264 when they were nine down.
Yeah.
So pretty handy contribution, 71 and counting, or 61, sorry, and counting for that last wicket. Where do you want to start? So pick up on any of those 5 points.
I want to start with the selection because let's go in chronological order. And there are some big topics. I'd love to hear what you made of it. I was on the way to the ground. I was in a bus full of people excited for the first ball and the team got read out on the bus. And I thought it was a practical joke. Michael Ness is playing. Nathan Lyon's not playing. Pat Cummins isn't playing. Okay, well, that was 50-50 anyway. Josh Inglis is playing. So hang about. We've got two wicket keepers, one opening batter, a couple of medium paces, and no spinner. And it just felt it felt off kilter and almost off brand for this team that has been so considered when changes have been made. We haven't been able to move people on at certain stages of their career, and yet all of a sudden, having won a test match, they don't pick Nathan Lyon in an attack that we've seen to be essentially pretty pedestrian today. And so Mitchell Starc, 400 test wickets. Nathan Lyon, 400 test wickets. They're missing the two other main prongs of their attack. Why would you take out that experience, the ability to control the scoreboard on a great batting surface against a soft pink ball? I don't understand how they get to that decision. Maybe you have more insight here, but if you were a selector picking that team, you'd probably stress test that. You'd go ask, hang about, well, Australia haven't not played a spinner for, I don't know, since 2012 probably against India.
That's right.
And even before that, you'd probably have to go back well and truly in time. So you're going against the
at home, yeah.
Yeah, sorry, at home, in a home summer, against the grain of history. And I mean, what happened today was almost predictable once they picked the team.
Yeah. I'm fascinated as to how they came up with that. And Nathan Lyon spoke to Channel 7 yesterday during play, and it was a pretty raw chat. Like, you could hear the hurt in his voice that he was, and all the reports were in Jamaica. The same thing happened when he was left out in the third test there. But he said he didn't know till he got to the ground today, which felt late. I mean, this is a team we're so used to naming their squad, you know, 24 hours before, or their team 24 hours before. And yet Nathan Lyon had no idea that he wasn't going to play until he arrived here. And then it's Michael Nesa, who most people forgot was in the squad, like, with no disrespect to him, but hasn't played a test in 3 years. And then they lean on him in this moment when, I mean, they didn't struggle getting the 20 wickets. They haven't for the last 10 years. I mean, They've played in 14 pink ball games, 27 times out of the 28 innings they've bowled the opposition out. The only time they didn't was when Faf declared 9 down. Remember when I think David Warner was ineligible to go out and bat, given the time that he'd had off the field. But I would have thought, even when you look at Perth, for example, and you think, well, Lyon only bowled a couple of overs, he wasn't really needed there. But isn't it just great insurance to have? Like, you win the test anyway, he's there if you get a partnership that develops. And there are moments, and we even saw that on the opening day, that there were moments where you thought, gee, would it be really handy right now to have Nathan Lyon bowling? And he wasn't available to them.
Well, the middle session was a key moment in the game, and you're looking around and they're bowling chest-high bumpers. They've gone to plan C because there's no spinner to control the action. Mm. So without that run out, which totally kind of changed the momentum of the game, this day could have been far worse for Australia. And then again, that last partnership, slow the ball up, make Archer make the pace of the ball. You can get the ball above his eyes. The attack looked one-dimensional. And no disrespect to Michael Nisa, but he's on his last legs. What we saw today was mid-120s, keeper up in the second session. Someone texted me through the day, he's taken one new ball wicket essentially all season in Sheffield Shield. So he's not barnstorming in with amazing form like a Doggett. And maybe they thought, let's put ourselves in the selector's shoes. Okay, we know the pink ball swings. Why don't we go for a little bit more of a swing option? Doggett out, Nisa in. That you can kind of horse trade a little bit like that. But at no stage do you think Nathan Lyon isn't playing this test. So I think it's changed the complexion of this test, and I think it's changed the complexion of the series. That was a pretty average day from the bowling attack. They looked at times clueless, I thought, and maybe I'm being harsh. Mitch Stark, 6 wickets, bowled like an absolute hero, a run out, and hardly a chance all day from the other fast bowlers.
Well, and inexperience too. Like, I mean, when have we seen an Australian attack with just about less experience? They've got a third gamer in Nisa spread across 4 years, and they've also got Brendan Doggett playing in his second match. So what happened? Do you think did they get psyched out by what England were doing? Was it sort of trying to be too cute?
I don't have an answer. It's obtuse. It is so left field.
It's so out of character from this group. Like,
off brand. I don't have an answer.
Yeah.
And you're right. I mean, I heard a whisper that they were still talking about the team an hour before the toss of the coin. Whether that's true or not, who knows?
Does it have, as you said, you feel like it changed the context of the series, and it feels that way. I mean, then again, we sat there at Stumps on day one in Perth, and we thought England well on top, and the following night we're celebrating Travis Head's 100. But I wonder too the way Nathan Lyon takes it. So he's clearly so hurt. How that plays in the dressing room. Mm-hmm. Team's got to go out there still and compete and win. It's got to be levels of awkwardness, doesn't it? Where the chief selector, George Bailey's down there, the coach is there, they're trying to win and perform on the field. Lyon's clearly dirty, he's not playing. And I'm not saying he's not a good teammate, I'm sure he's going around and doing what he needs to do. But it's just another conversation that needs to be had somewhere, and almost feels like a lever that didn't need to be pulled, and yet they decided to go in that direction.
Yeah, last comment here, almost like they were trying too hard to get a little bit funky and a little bit proactive, and actually they got so far from what they were trying to achieve. Anyway, let's talk about the actual cricket.
Yeah, Joe Root, we should start there. I mean, this was framed up months and months out. Fourth tour of Australia. He's played 14 tests leading in, now 15 completed test matches. Never got 100, never won a test match, and yet he comes out with England 2 for 5.
Yeah.
And the tremors of what happened in Perth, and I'm sure that would be ringing in their ears. And all of a sudden, he does it. He does what that answers the question that was hanging over him as to whether he can score 100 on Australian shores against his chief rival. And 3 innings in, he's completed that mission.
Yeah, and this is a great media story and a great story for him. You're right. It was a sensational innings. Could have been 3 for 10. Smith almost took a screamer at second slip. I guess my question back to you is, his two main nemesis have been Hazelwood and Cummins.
Yeah.
And so he's walked out to bat on the best batting surface in Australia against a soft pink, not soft at the time, but it went soft very quickly, particularly in that middle session. Nisa, Doggett, Boland, Stark, Green, no Lyon. He'll never get a better chance of scoring 100.
And he did.
He played beautifully. You can't take the runs away, but I'm just saying it was set up perfectly for him, and it was actually more a emotional and mental challenge than technical today. He just went about his business. He looked untroubled. When the ball went soft, he got to lay the ball off through, you know, backward point that we've seen him be so successful doing in the UK. And he just got into his work as the great test batsman that he is. So it is, you know, the monkey off the back, so to speak. But
Is that a worry going forward?
No, I don't think so. Because as soon as Cummins comes back, he doesn't line him up as well as as he could. But it is a concern. You don't want their best player scoring too many hundreds.
What was going on with Cummins, by the way? Was he ever going to play?
I think they were thinking about it. I think they were thinking if there was more grass on the wicket, he's got, let's call it, 20 or 30 overs for the test.
Yeah.
But they're going to need 40 out of their fast bowlers at this rate. And so he wasn't quite ready.
I reckon what they did, and now we're back talking about the selectors again. I'll move on, I promise. I reckon what they did is they thought, if Lyon only bowls, you know, 6 or 8 overs, are we better with that? Or are we better with Pat's 6 or 8 overs? And they were planning to go with Pat. And then basically he didn't quite come up. And in the end they thought, oh, we're still committed to that plan, so we'll just sub Nisa in for Cummins, and Lyon still misses out.
Yeah,
I wonder if that was part of the...
Potentially.
Look, anyway. Well done to Joe Root. I mean, that's... It felt like a moment, to be honest, to be here at the Gabba, that this great of the game. I mean, it's a short list of guys that have scored more test runs than him. Sachin Tendulkar, Joe Root, that's it. And now he's got 100 in these parts. Well done to him and England, obviously, in a commanding position.
Do you think it has a little asterisk given that it's a pink ball?
So what, he still hasn't got a red ball 100 in Australia?
There we go.
It's not the day for any of that, Teddy. The day for that. It's a Joe Root celebration.
You know what? I loved it. I gave him a standing ovation. I put my hands above my head and I gave him a clap. And then put an asterisk next to it.
Good on him. He's still batting when England start the second day, 135 not out. The Mitchell Starc performance?
Magic. How good was it? The difference between world-class and good was on display today. All day, 140-plus control, steamed in, moved the ball when he needed to, hardly bowled a bad ball. Every time he bowled, it looked like he was going to take a wicket. In fact, in that evening session when Australia got momentum back and Will Jacks came out to bat, you thought, geez, why don't they go back to Starc here? And it wasn't until he came into the attack 25 minutes later that he took a wicket. Every time he bowled, it looked like they did not want to face him.
But even after the first session, like the start of the second session, I think Brooke was at the crease and you'll remember scoring runs. It took a while for him to come back on. He finally got the ball again from the Stanley Street end. And I know it was a hot day. He'd only bowled 8 overs at the time and he got Harry Brooke's second ball.
It was almost with too many fast bowlers. They didn't know how to work them around, and there was a lack of rhythm to the tactics even.
And that can happen, can't it?
For sure. You get thrown out of kilter. You know, they went to some strange plans, but Starc, exceptional. And, you know, I was sitting side on all day. And just the airspeed is noticeable. Yeah. You know, the difference between one early 140s and medium pace at 125 and the time that the batsmen have to react is really palpable, actually, when you're live at the ground and you're seeing it. And he was the only one that really looked like taking a wicket.
He's taken 22 wickets at 7.
So you're basically winning the most wickets.
In his last 4 innings. It sounds ludicrous given he's already put together a Hall of Fame career as a test player. Is he playing his best test cricket
right
now?
No, that's fact. Yeah. Without doubt.
It's wild, isn't it? It's 35 or whatever.
But when he likes, I think he likes leading the attack. And so, yes, he has a role. When Cummins and Hazel would play, have a crack with the new ball, pitch it up, swing it, but, you know, and then almost go to the X Factor bowler. Well, he just has to be the guy at the moment. And he has stepped up, put his cape on. And he is exactly that.
He bowled like an absolute demon. So he's now got more wickets than any other left arm quick in the history of the game.
He goes past
a guy named Wasim Akram.
Not bad bowling. Wowee.
Phenomenal.
Proud of him.
Phenomenal. Well done to Mitchell Starc.
I think that's more of a story than Joe Root.
Yeah.
The most wickets by a left arm fast bowler in the history of cricket. And you want to talk about Joe Root's asterisk 100?
You're a lefty. And this is Joe Root, who scored more runs than everyone else, not named Sachin Tendulkar. He gets the 100, and you're sitting here saying, oh, yeah, he got it, but so what?
Mate, I'm clearly being a little... It's late at night here. You've made me stay till bloody 10:30 at night to record this. I'm a little bit loose.
Josh Inglis, So listed at seven, by the way. So he's going to come in after Alex Carey. Barehanded, picks it up, side on, one grab, on the hop, throws the stumps down, one stump to hit.
Spectacular. That was great theatre. I actually thought, the fielding today was pretty good, but I actually thought with Marnus at first slip with Usman out, the energy in the ring for most of the day, I would say, was pretty dull until that moment. That was as good a piece of fielding as you'll ever see, and it changed the complexion of the day. They couldn't capitalise on it. They did momentarily. But the fielding, the catching was excellent. I thought Alex Carey could have been the best single day of wicketkeeping I'd seen live.
Gee, he was clean, wasn't he?
It was beyond clean. It was actually spectacular. So he took the great catch running back, but he kept up to the stumps to Nisa, Boland. There was a leg side stumping when Harry Brook went to regular ramp, kept his eye on the ball, almost stumped him. There was a bouncer when he was up to the stumps. It was poetry.
Red hot. There's no doubt about it. That's a phenomenal day. That catch too. I remember Wade Seckham taking one here, sort of in a one-day game going back sort of many years
during
ago.
Your age.
Whenever you get the keepers in particular, so as much as the work up to the stumps is clean and you see them diving around and everything else, but when the keeper with the pads on runs into the outfield underneath the sky ball, there's something about it. As there is, by the way, when someone throws the stumps down, it's one of the great parts of our game and the crowd gets involved. And like it was with the greats like, you know, Jonty Rhodes and Ricky Ponting and everything else, when you see the replays, and it's almost, it gets better every time you see it, and it felt like Josh Inglis's run out was kind of in that category today. The more times you watched it, the more you thought, that's sensational work.
Yeah, threw off balance across his body, one stump to hit. I think it was aided by, you know, in the day-night test, they have the lights in the stumps. You don't have that normally in test cricket, so there was a bit more theatre to it. It was excellent. While we talk about this, kind of off-piste a little bit, but one thing I did notice today that you don't see, and we hadn't factored in, how dark the night session goes for longer in Brisbane.
It does.
And so you're used to the evening session in Adelaide, but in Brisbane it was dark at, I don't know, 4:30, 5 o'clock?
6:30, yeah.
No, but the light's taking effect. The lights are on taking effect over the shadows of the ground from 4 o'clock. So most of the day is actually played under lights.
It's a great call out. We spoke about it a little bit as part of the coverage. So sunset in Adelaide is 8:15. Sunset in Brisbane is 6:30. Mm. So it's an hour and 45 difference. And as you said, where the twilight or the dusk period goes for longer. So here in Brisbane, you genuinely have three different modes. You have the daytime, you have the twilight, and then you have the nighttime. So you play a lot more cricket under the floodlights here than you do in Adelaide. That must be challenging for a player, surely.
Yeah, for sure. I think that we'll see that how that plays out, actually, when Australia get to bat.
Imagine if you got 100 across all three different modes of the game that you were able to walk
that,
out there.
That would make you a great of the game.
In the third over, and you're still there at stumps. Yeah. So 135 not out now with England 9 for 325. What have I missed? Anything in particular that's worth calling out? What did you make of the day, by the way? We both watched it, but from different vantage points, and here we are, get to sit at the end of it and chop it up together.
I thought it was great fun. The Gabba is obviously a test not usually that well attended. It's hot during the middle of the day. You sit in the sun at 10:30. There was a party atmosphere. They were playing Sweet Caroline. The beers were flowing. I thought it was excellent. It was a fantastic advertisement for day-night test cricket.
The series alive?
Oh, is the series alive? I mean, someone, I can't remember who it was, someone said, this feels like a banana peel test match for the Australians, but
I may or may not have quoted that during the day's play, Teddy, to make sure you got a little shout out. But I've even got it written here in my notes. Banana peel, Ed Cowan, was part of our pre-game chat earlier today, so I remember that.
Let's not get too far ahead of this. Both teams have to bat, but what we saw today, England picked themselves off the canvas because there was a world where they could have been actually quite scarred from what happened last week. They not just picked themselves up, they threw some punches. I don't know what the metaphor really is and who they were like, but they didn't take a backward step today. What I did see from their batsmen was discipline. They were still very positive, but they played the ball late. They played the ball straight. They defended well. They left well. And they made the Australians bowl to them. Even when the Australians went wide in that middle session, Stokes locked in.
So they learned their lessons from Perth?
Absolutely. That was a just an ominous sign that batting unit might be clicking into gear.
Little historical markers for you. So England already are trying to become the first team to win the Ashes down under, falling 1-0 behind since Len Hutton's team in the mid-1950s.
Mm.
And only one team in the history of the game has come from 2-0 down to win a series. That's nearly 150 years of Test cricket. It was a team in the late 1930s wearing a baggy green, which featured a guy named Bradman. So if England are relying on going 2-0 down and coming back to win, they're not a once in 150-year team, so they need to get themselves back into this series with a win here at the Gabba. And that's a positive start to be 325 on the board at Stumps.
That was fun.
Should we do it again tomorrow?
I'll see you same time, same place.
How good is this? Ed Cowan in the house at the Gabba. This has been the ABC Cricket Podcast. Catch us tomorrow, Monday and Friday, right throughout the Ashes summer and after every day's play. Evening, Teddy.
Later, Corb. Well done.
Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.